You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers for Friday, January 11th. I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find this show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show. And again, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at LockedOnCavs. Email us at LockedOnCavs@gmail.com and find me on Twitter at LockedOnCavs. And you can find every NBA team on Locked On on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever. And you can find Locked On Browns there as well, which there's a lot of stuff to really listen to on Locked On Browns right now because they hired Freddie Kitchens. So check out Jeff Floyd's excellent podcast. Today's show is a very fun one. So yesterday, you heard Mike Zevgano and I blow up the Cavs roster ahead of next season. If you haven't, I recommend going and checking out that episode. Today's show is our first mock draft. I'm not going to call it a real 2019 NBA mock draft. But on this draft Friday with Trevor Magnotti, we went through what the Cavs would do with the first few picks, looking at who they would take in these situations, and also talked about the merits of the idea that maybe if they don't get a high pick and get to take, say, Zion or RJ Barrett, maybe they should move back and pick more than one guy if possible. This is a really fun show. This is, I think, one of the more fun shows we've done in recent memory. Now, there is some Cavs news. Larry Nance Jr. did suffer after being hurt the other night. Has a sprained MCL. He's going to be out 2 to 3 weeks. The Cavs now have even less healthy bodies. It puts a lot more pressure on Tristan. I think the big thing here is we're going to see what Ante Zizic can do for the next couple weeks. If you're looking at a positive spin on this, maybe him and maybe Nance and Love do come back at around the same time. That could be a good thing. But in general, this is a tough look for the Cavs. Another issue, another missing body. I wonder if they will get another big in there. Maybe Bonzi Colson could come up from the G League and play some backup minutes up front if they needed that. They may need to go in that direction because they just don't have very many healthy bodies. And Ante Zizic himself is just coming back from injury, and Tristan just came back from injury. So not great news for the Cavs and for Larry Nance. He'll be out for the entirety of this road trip at the very least. The Cavs do play Friday night in Houston against James Harden and the Rockets. We'll have a recap up of that game in your feed Saturday morning. Don't expect it to be a particularly competitive game, but perhaps the Cavs will shock the Rockets and delay their blast off in Houston. But today's show is all about the draft. Thanks again to Trevor, who you can find on Twitter at Illegal Screens, for coming on, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. So stay tuned for more of that episode and enjoy tonight's game as much as possible. Cheers. Talk to you tomorrow. And joining me for this week's draft Friday is the excellent Trevor Magnotti. You can find his work at The Step Back and Fear the Sword. Trevor, how's it going?
Going pretty good. Double dipping on the Cavs podcast this week, so yeah. That should give you a pretty good indicator of where we're at with this team.
Yeah, I just want to call out Justin and Carter for aping me. That's all I'm going to say about that. But this week on Draft Friday, we are going to be doing, I wouldn't say this is our first mock draft. We are inevitably going to have Trevor on this podcast, and we are going to do some form of a mock draft. That is a ways away, but we're recording this on Tuesday, January 8th. It is 10:18 p.m. The Cleveland Cavaliers, although they scored 72 points and a half somehow, had lost to the Indiana Pacers. They have now lost 10 games in a row. They are 8-33. They have the worst record in the NBA. They're atrocious. Obviously with the different lottery odds, it is not a lock that they will have even a top four pick, but they are going to have a high draft pick. What Trevor and I are going to do today is based on his draft board, which his most recent one came out about a week ago. You can find that in the show notes if you are looking for that. But we are going to basically say, okay, if the Cavs get one or if they get the second pick, and go down these picks and sort of look at who they would take. Trevor is obviously going to have some more detailed analysis on these guys than I have, but I'm going to take them based on sort of what I know about them from him, from my own research, and we're going to go from there. We're probably going to go through the top five picks, I think, based on time, maybe down to six, depending on where we are time-wise. But Trevor, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
All right, let's start with number one. I'm just going to say, I think if they win the lottery, I think they have to literally just, like, announce at the lottery. Like, sort of like when they celebrated when they were going to take Kyrie, if you remember that, when Machine Gun Kelly was there. But bring Kid Cudi this time. Bring, like, the actual, like, relevant Cleveland rapper. Literally just announce it there. We're taking Zion Williamson. There should be, like, unless he, like, tears his ACL between now and then, even then, I'd probably still probably do it. This guy is the one guy in this draft to me that screams he's going to put butt in your seats. He's going to have superstar potential. They're obviously, I think, like what he would look like on the roster, something we talked about a few weeks ago, and how that might be a tad bit complicated because he's probably best suited to be a four. He might be forced into playing some three. I think it literally, if they're not, they have the number one pick, it is Zion, and they should just like, they should not even try to like feint the fact that they might take someone else. Just take him. Don't overthink it.
Yeah, I think that it works out pretty well for both sides because I think that Zion's the type of guy that Dan Gilbert's going to buy into regardless of whether it's valid or not. It is, for once. He's actually going to make the right decision by doing the typical, okay, let's watch YouTube for 5 minutes deal. But I think that's going to be pretty well telegraphed from the beginning. And I think that's going to be the case for most of these teams at this point. I don't see a huge chance that RJ Barrett is going to be the number or in the conversation for number one. I think that Zion is pretty clearly the number one guy and should be for the Cavs. I think that his ceiling is high enough that he could potentially be that Blake Griffin type, that Kyrie Irving type that is your number one pick and from day one is the number one guy on your team for the next 4 to 5 years. I think that that's what you're looking at. You want him to be that base that the rest of the team builds around. You want him to be the guy that if they're picking number one, you want a guy who's going to take all of the expectations and all of the pressure off Colin Sexton and is going to put that on himself. And nobody is going to be better suited for that than Zion.
So one question I'll have, and then we're going to move on to two is, if you look at the teams that are in contention to get the number one pick, and this isn't a Cavs thing, but I'm just sort of curious about this. You look at the teams that could get the number one pick. You know, like any of the lottery teams obviously could, but the teams with the best odds, you know, be Cleveland, then Phoenix right now, and then Chicago, New York, and the Hawks. These five pretty bad teams compared to the rest of the league. Where do the Cavs in those five teams, just like gut reaction, in terms of Zion's like potential day one impact, where do they rank on that five list of situations you would like to see him in?
I think I've got them third. I think that they're a little bit behind Atlanta, who is going to have a very similar situation to what the Cavs have. You know, a young point guard who struggled a little bit, some pieces, but nobody who's really, you know, that great moving forward. I think the big draw there is who do you trust more to be able to play well with Zion and have a higher ceiling, Trae Young or Colin Sexton?
And John Collins seems like an interesting fit next to him too as a rim roller.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I give that edge to Trae. My number one is New York because the fit of him and Kristaps Porzingis, if he's able to come back healthy together, is just so perfect. And when you throw in the possibility that you know, is looking pretty real that, you know, they could get Kyrie Irving this summer. Kyrie Irving throwing lobs to Zion, just kissing my fingers here because that's just such a perfect aesthetic along with Porzingis flaring out to the three-point line. And I just love that fit aesthetically. So they're kind of my number one situation looking at it from a neutral perspective, and Atlanta's slightly ahead of the Cavs, but I like the Cavs a lot better than the Bulls and the Suns quite a bit in terms of landing spots for him.
Yeah, the chance like that Zion could end up playing for Jim Boylan just seems like something like we should like the league should tamper to avoid. That's like a hot take, but Zion should not play for Jim Boylan. Okay, so number two. Let's say the Cavs get the number two pick. Let's just assume Zion's off the board. I think that is, like, a safe assumption. Who is your guy at number two for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I think it's pretty clearly RJ. I think that he's the other guy in this draft that I think has a reliable outcome at this point to become a star. I don't trust anybody else to really get to that point in the way that I do with Barrett. Now, my big issues with Barrett are still there. You know, I'm really worried about him as a functional passer at the NBA level. I'm really worried about him as a defender at the NBA level because he has had some very questionable moments where he just has some of those effort issues that put you a step beyond guys who just don't diagnose plays well or just take the occasional play off. It is a consistent problem with him. So I kind of worry about him being the wrong type of star where he's maybe a guy who is going to be more of someone who can just eat shots but isn't actually going to provide winning value to your team. So I do worry about that, but I think that he's the one of anybody else in this draft who does have that all-star potential, who does have that potential to kind of reverse that track record, go back to what he showed in high school and in international ball, and eventually become this high-level two-way playmaking wing. So if you can get that at number two, that's pretty solid for this draft. So I still think that I give RJ a slight edge over everyone else.
I agree with that, and my little add-on there would be, I think if there was a situation where, like, this year this team was more competent to some degree, even if they were this bad, like, they just look like if they added, like, the right young piece that was, like, maybe more ready from day one, I could see a scenario where they talk themselves into a more NBA-ready guy or, like, a guy that sort of fits more of a niche. But Sexton hasn't been good. Osman has been up and down. Kevin Love has played 4 games. I think you just have to take the highest upside guy, too, and just if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but I think you have to go for it. So let's go to number three. I think, you know, obviously the lottery odds could impact this a little bit. So Trevor, I'm going to let you pick because you're going to kind of think about this. Well, let's say, like, the Cavs are number three and, you know, let's if it is the odds based on today, it would be – let's say the Knicks go one, let's go Phoenix two. The Cavs are at number three there. I mean, let's just say roughly, who would you be the guy you're sort of targeting in an ideal scenario at number three for the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Yeah, this is where it gets really interesting with this draft because this 3-8 range, there are a lot of guys who are bunched closely together and teams are going to evaluate these guys differently. So you have to kind of take it in a way of who is going to provide the most value to this specific roster and is going to have the best chance of becoming that, you know, max type star level player with the guys that this team already has on hand. And I'm going to zag a little bit differently than what a lot of different boards will have. You know, some have them would have the Cavs at three taking Cam Reddish or Nasir Little. I've got them taking Jarrett Culver. He is kind of my guy that I've been riding, and all of draft Twitter has been riding. He's 6'8 or 6'9 at this point. He's definitely grown over the past summer, and there's a little bit of debate on how much exactly, but he's definitely a little bit bigger, has that true big NBA wing size, and has the skill set to be able to match it. He's a pretty good driver, pretty good shooter. It makes some advanced passes, has some real value as both an on-ball player and somebody who can kind of fill in on the margins, and he's one of the better perimeter defenders in college basketball this season. He's been very consistent with his ability to diagnose plays, be able to shut down the lane from all types of players when he's guarding one-on-one on the perimeter. He's just a guy that I think really has a shot to be a very quality two-way wing, even if he doesn't have that star potential that Barrett does. I think that he's a safe option, and he's a guy that is going to provide a lot of value for whoever picks him in the draft. And I think that he's got a really good shot because his baseline is already so high. Having that extra year of development in college, I think that's worked out for him, and now he's a little bit more enticing to a team like the Cavs, who maybe don't have to put in the work that we don't trust them with to be able to get a quality, productive player for their rotation.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that we don't really know how good the Cavs are developing players. That's a very open question right now, so that could be appealing to them. I'm going to say this. I don't know. I think I would probably go Reddish, but it's basically for this simple reason. When you look at how they outline, and I'm looking at your board, so it's and have those having watched both of these guys a little bit, especially when I saw Culver rise up your board, I made a point to go watch him a little bit. I'm very impressed. Like, what you're saying, I think, hits pretty accurate. The reason that Reddish might appeal to me if I'm the Cavs, and this is a little bit because I'm a little concerned about Colin Sexton right now. I just watched a game where he was literally open behind three and took a half step and a dribble in to take a long two that he missed. I don't know what's up with that shot. Right, but I'm very concerned about him as a three-point shooter. Maybe he figures it out, but I am super concerned that that's just maybe he's going to not be that. The reason Reddish, I think, could be really appealing at three and could make sense there is because if he is elite as a high-value three-point shooter and is, like, a good defensive player, that is, like, really useful even if he isn't perfect at the other stuff, and specifically if the Cavs are going to try to make Sexton part of their future, which I think they're going to try to do. He seems to fit really well with Sexton. Am I wrong about that?
No, I think that's pretty accurate. I think that if the Cavs, if we're going in this situation where maybe we go down to the fourth pick and Culver's the third pick, Reddish is the next guy for me, because I think that he has the chance to be that Klay Thompson type volume three-point shooter that he's showing the ability to be at Duke. I don't really trust him as a creator on offense. I don't think he's a good enough passer, even though he's shown some flashes there, and he's definitely not a good enough dribbler to be a primary. But this is a guy who is very comfortable sitting behind the three-point line and is very willing to just pull from beyond the arc whenever he has the opportunity. His ability to do that is part of why RJ Barrett has been so impressive this year, because he is always sitting out there as an outlet for Barrett when he goes to the rim, and Barrett's always able to find him. And that's been one of the most impressive things for me about their relationship so far this year. And I think when you project that forward, same thing could be true with Colin Sexton. And I think when you add in that Reddish has the bones to be one of those very switchable guys that can defend across multiple positions and can take some pressure off of some of the Cavs' weak spots, I really like that fit. The only reason I really go more with Culver is because, one, Culver's a little bit bigger, is a little bit more polished on the defensive end as well, and I'm not sure, again, I don't know that I trust the Cavs to be able to put the development time into Reddish as a defender. I think they can get a little bit more ball handling ability out of him. I just don't know if they're going to be able to make him into the type of defender he needs to be successful at the NBA level.
That's fair. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with pick number 4 of our mock draft. That's not quite exactly a mock draft on this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. So stay tuned for more from me and Trevor. And we are back. Okay, Trevor, to recap for those of you that have been listening, number 1, if the Cavs get that pick, it's Zion Williamson. Number 2, RJ Barrett. These are picks we both agree with. Number 3, I'll just say our paths are a little bit different here. You have Jarrett Culver from Texas Tech at 3. I have Cam Reddish from Duke at number 3. Number 4, is it easy enough for me to say here that we are going to flip-flop here? Because I would go Culver at 4. Would you go Reddish at 4, or would you go a different direction?
Yeah, I'd go Reddish at 4. Kind of like I outlined, one of the reasons that I'd pick him above some of the other guys out here is he just has that one bankable skill that nobody else really in this class even has in that volume three-point shooting. I don't think there's anybody else left who has a single skill that is as good as he is at spotting up. And I think that that's something that is just foundational that the Cavs need, because we see it night in, night out on this losing streak. The Cavs don't have anybody who can knock down a shot from outside off the catch right now. They have nobody that can do it consistently. And I think that's something that they need as a foundational piece of whatever they're building moving forward.
Yeah, love Matthew Dellavedova. Not when he's like maybe your best catch and shoot player. That's a problem. And obviously Kevin loves her, but like, that's not great. All right, number 5. Trevor, I'm just going to say, this is where I think things could get a little weird. I think if they end up at 5, I'm not going to say that like I think they're like in a not great position, but I say this is where I would get a little bit more worried about what they might do. For number, I'm going to run through the number 5 through 10 guys on your board. So number five, and this is number five. This five prospect is the last guy in your second tier, and you're basing your last board. That's Bol Bol from Oregon, who has a foot injury. Nazir Little is at the top of tier three at number six. Then you have Jonte Porter, the brother of Michael Porter, at number seven. Kobe White from UNC, a point guard at number eight, who likely I would just guess is off the Cavs radar because he's a point guard. You have Simi, I'm going to mispronounce his name, but Simi Shitu from Vanderbilt.
Yep, nailed it.
All right. From Vanderbilt at number nine. And then DeAndre Hunter, who we talked about before, at number 10. So that's where we're at. And then Keldon Johnson, we also talked about, is at number 12 on this board. All right. So, Trevor, your pick at number five, assuming that your top four are the guys gone, who would you be kind of prioritizing?
So if you're following along here, I've gone chalk so far on my board, 1 through 4. I'm going to deviate from that a little bit. I'm not taking Bol Bol. One, foot fracture, really scary. Not sure I trust that, and I don't feel safe with picking him just based on that alone. And also, I don't think that he's going to be the type of player that the Cavs will have any idea what to do with.
Agreed.
Because I see him as more of like a 7'2" wing rather than being a traditional rim protector, which you would naturally think because, you know, 7'2". But I think that my guy that I would go with at number five would be Nazir Little. I think that even though he's had a little bit of a down year, his minutes have not been consistent, his play has not been consistent, his shot has not been consistent at this point, he still has the foundations of a shot that is going to translate to being a scorer at the NBA level. And I think that he's able to get to a lot of different spots on the floor. His pull-up jumper is really solid, and he's able to make all of these off-balance shots that are really, really impressive. And I think when you pair that with his size and strength and his competitive nature, he hasn't been consistent on defense, but I think he can eventually get to the point where he may even be better than Jarrett Culver as a defensive prospect, just because he is so much quicker and also has a little bit of a strength edge there. So I think you're getting at minimum a bench wing who can create a little bit of offense off the bench and is going to be kind of a utility defensive player at minimum. And I think at maximum, you're getting a guy who's going to be on the level of potentially RJ Barrett. So I think that's my reasoning for taking Nazir Little. Again, we get to the point of, do I trust the Cavs to develop that? I don't know, but I think that the foundation's there, that he can at least be a productive guy that can go out and help this team get a bucket, and they don't have a lot of those guys right now outside of Jordan Clarkson and Colin Sexton. So I think that that's something that's really enticing about him.
Who else would be in your consideration at five?
I think that Bol would be in consideration, especially if he can prove himself to be healthy. It gets really tricky here because here's where a lot of the centers and point guards really have a lot of value, and the Cavs obviously don't need a lot of those guys. So I'd be looking at DeAndre Hunter, which we talked about last week. I'd be looking at Keldon Johnson a little bit as well. A little bit at Romeo Langford and Kevin Porter, although I'm not totally convinced that they're worth a top five pick at this point. And I think those are kind of the guys that I would mainly be looking at, with one exception, who, if we go down to a six pick, I'll give because it's kind of a hot take.
All right, let's just go to six. I think I would take a Little at five as well. I'll just say this: I think for me, Bol Bol is not really. I'm like very much like, get me wings. That is what I'm looking at if I'm the Cavs. So Bol Bol scares the crap out of me, and I don't know if I could feel comfortable taking him. But who is your number six?
Darius Garland.
Whoa! Not what I was expecting. That's some spice. That is some spice, Trevor.
So I kind of gave a brief description of why I think he's a good fit for the Cavs, even though they do have Colin Sexton on the Chase Down Pod, and I'll kind of reiterate that a little bit here, because Garland has the skill set that I think is going to be functional playing off of a guy like Sexton, even though he is kind of more in the pure point guard mold. I think that he is going to be better served as a secondary playmaker, because while he has really good touch on his passing, I don't think that he sees the floor at the level of point guards that we've seen come out in the past few years. You know, he's not at the level of De'Aaron Fox. He's not at the level of a Trae Young in terms of being able to see the floor. He's better when he has simple reads to make and you can build in advanced looks for him, but he needs to be able, or he needs to know where he needs to look to be able to make those passes. And I think when you couple that with his mechanics shooting off ball, which are fantastic, and his pull-up jumper, which is really good, I think that that's going to make him a pretty competent off-ball option. And I think that he's going to be kind of a steadying hand that you can put on sex. Now, what you do on defense with those two guys who are both under 6'3", and that's not really one that I know how to answer yet, especially if Sexton doesn't make any strides on the defensive end. That's kind of what you have to bank on there. But, you know, I have seen some positive flashes in terms of competitive play from Garland. You know, he makes smart reads as a team defender. He's not totally useless, even though he's tiny. And I think when you pair that with the value that he could bring as a steadying hand, as an off-ball option that can be kind of your number two ball handler, I think it helps take pressure off of him in terms of his finishing and the scoring load that he would have to take on. And I think that he can be a good enough defender that he can defend the point of attack. You can hide Sexton off ball and kind of make use of his gambling ability, which is pretty good at this point. I think that that's a really nice fit, even though it is super weird having two guys that are that small pair together. So that entices me a little bit more than a lot of the other options, just because Garland is so polished at this point. If Garland was 6'4 instead of 6'2 and 190 instead of maybe 170, he would be a top three or top four player in this class to me. I think that he has the tools to be a really valuable player next to Colin Sexton, and those two can really help each other develop moving forward in a way that if they took like a Kobe White or they took Ja Morant, I don't think they'd get the same value as they would with Garland.
Would Hunter or Bol Bol or someone else be your second option at six?
Yeah, I think I'd start looking at Hunter or Keldon Johnson at that point. It'd be Hunter, Johnson, Langford would kind of be where I'm at with that. I'm staying away from Bol Bol, Jontay Porter, and Semi Shattuck if I'm the Cavs, just because while you can make the concessions of roster space for a player of Zion's caliber, you can't really do that with any of the centers. And even though they may end up being higher quality players than Tristan Thompson, Larry Nance, I don't know that you're going to be able to devote the time with how those two contracts are structured to be able to let those guys develop adequately.
Okay, so I would say I'm intrigued by that take. I like that idea. It makes me a little worried about who's actually going to play the three, but maybe David Nwaba can just kind of like stick around. You could make that work for at least a year. I would probably go Hunter at six. I think based on what I know right now, I just sort of have really started to find myself as like, if they needed to like pick someone because they fall down the lottery, he would make a lot of sense to me. Now, Trevor, here, I told you before we started recording that the Jeff Siegel, who, you know, runs Early Bird Rides, Retro for the Sword, is a great, great basketball mind. We were talking about Cavs draft assets, and this is his take, and I disagree with it slightly. He basically told me that it's like, if you don't get Zion, and maybe just Zion for him, and for me it'd probably be Zion. Zion would be like, obviously you get him no matter what, but depending on where they fall, and for me it's probably in the 6 to 8 range. I doubt they fall that far, but it's, you know, theoretically possible. If they went that far and a team like, let's say they fall to like 7, and a team like Boston has 2 picks a little behind them, let's say it's like 9 and 14 or something, if they call you and are like, hey, we'd really like to get your 1 pick for our 2 picks, because of where the Cavs are at talent-wise as a roster and because of their many needs and everything, if they aren't in a position to get a certain type of player, do you see that as a viable move? And how low would you have to have them fall for you to actually consider that?
Yes, it's a viable move. I'm going to shout out my draft buddy, Mike Gribanoff of the Stepien, who has been on the trade down train in this draft, because after two or three or four, depending on what your opinion is, it's lottery tickets at this point. This draft has a lot of guys, and some of them are going to be very productive players. Draft has the potential to be surprisingly deep because of how many quality wings there are and how many guys there are that fit obvious NBA roles in a way that we haven't seen in the past couple drafts down the board. And I think if you can get I think when you couple that with how teams are going to have differences in evaluating this class, I think if you can trade down from a pick like 6 or 7 to maybe like 8 and 14, or even something like, you know, like 11 and 20, I think you're better off taking the two options, because you're giving yourself multiple chances at getting a productive player out of this class rather than having just one. And I think that makes a lot of sense for the Cavs. One, because of that trust issue that we keep hammering. Two, because the roster, just there aren't enough bodies at this point to care about moving forward. So getting multiple guys that you can invest in might be beneficial. And I think that there's some value to, even if you strike out on getting the stars, you maybe end up, let's say they end up with like 11 and 20, and they end up with like DeAndre Hunter at number 11, and at 20 they pick like Nickeil Alexander-Walker of Virginia Tech. Well, you may not have gotten the star potential that you would have gotten by picking Nassir Little at 6, but instead you've got a guy that you can pretty reasonably be sure is going to be able to fill a role as a defensive 4, and you've got a guy who you're pretty sure is going to be able to fill a role as a secondary pick and roll option and catch and shoot weapon. That's pretty good odds, and I think I take that rather than trying to put all this significant development time into a guy who just might not have the ability to be anything more than what those two players end up being. So I am 100% on board with the idea of, if this pick is not in the top three, try to trade down. Get assets, get lotto tickets for this draft, because I think that's the better way to operate with how this class stacks up.
So just kind of looking at teams that theoretically could like want to do this in terms of getting picks this year, Boston is the team with a lot of picks. Mm-hmm. So they would be the one that has fifth. They'll probably have 3 first-round picks. The San Antonio will have 2 first-round picks in all likelihood. So that's another team that if you want to – they obviously – their second one's going to be way back in the lottery because it's coming from via Toronto. So that's a bit farther back. The one team that, when I look at the teams that have picks in this year's draft, and I don't even think it's out of the question that it could make sense to get picks in future drafts if you wanted to go that way. The one that would be really interesting to me is if Travis Schlenk calls up Kobe Altman and is like, hey, look – we have this Dallas pick that is like, let's just say it's 13, and you guys are at, you know, we're at, you know, we ended up at like 6, and you guys are at 4. I don't know if Atlanta does that because, like, again, like they're not getting Zion, they're not getting RJ, like they're not getting that guy. But I wonder if there's a scenario where like they could get like those two Atlanta. I don't know. Like, these are like hypotheticals, but those are sort of the three teams when you look at this board for this specific draft. And Brooklyn too, actually. Brooklyn at 15, and then they get Denver's first round pick. They could be another team too. So there's a couple teams there that could be doing it. And I would say if I'm the Cavs, I'm probably seeking something like this out if I'm not getting someone I love at 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, I think that there are going to be teams that can present themselves. And I would even go as far as saying that, you know, if you can get a pick in the first 5 or 6 of the second round and a first, that's preferable. So that opens up the door to, like, you know, if Phoenix is under you and they really like somebody, they've got, you know, 32, 33 that they can throw in. If Philadelphia wants to trade up for anybody, they have a first and an early second. I think that the depth of the guys that could be those potential lottery picks goes down that far at this point. You know, that's obviously if everybody stays in the draft, which they probably won't. But, you know, that's in play, too, where, you know, those top second round picks are becoming just as valuable as those late first round picks, because not only are you getting the same level of talent, usually you're getting them at a much cheaper price. So I think that's something to keep in mind, too, is it doesn't even have to be something where you're leaning on Boston to really like somebody. You can just go for any of those, you know, 31 through 35, 36 in the second round, and it opens up the doors to potential trade up options that are enticing.
I'm just, like, not ready for the potential situation where it's like the Cavs are like have a pick, and like we hear later on that Danny Ainge like really offered his four first round picks, and the Cavs are like, nah, man, we just like really loved we just really really loved the Bol Bol, and I'm just gonna be like, all right, I'm out, like I'm good, I don't need this this insanity in my life. But like that's the scenario they're gonna be in, and I'm you saying that you would like do a first and like a second to me is really interesting, because I don't know if I would be that. I guess it depends where that pick is, but I would be a little concerned about that, right? Like if it's not like a, you know, a higher first round pick, I would be a little bit worried about like punting on like a lottery pick. I just would. I would not. I would probably like target the back end of the lottery more so than like deeper into the first.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, it's a question of, would you rather for your rebuild run, or would you rather have like Malik Monk, or, and this is obviously assuming that the Cavs do a like smart decision making with
which
their
you
picks.
Know which to be fair, like not a guarantee.
Yeah, so like would you rather have Malik Monk, or would you rather have, I don't want to use OG Anunoby, so I'm trying to think of a guy who was similar range in that second round. Would you rather have Jared Allen, Jordan Bell?
Okay. Okay.
Would you rather have?
I would not want Malik Monk.
Yeah. Like just in a vacuum, and I think that's a really interesting conversation, because you can end up, or would you rather have two guys who are going to probably be the fourth or fifth starter on whatever your team's going to be, or would you rather have a guy who is either going to be the second guy or not on the team at all? It's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be a long one. It's January. It tells you where this Cavs season is at, that this is what Trevor and I have talked about, that this is the most fun I've had recording a Locked On Cavaliers podcast in like 2 weeks, because the Cavs are just awful, have lost 10 in a row, and are garbage. So the draft and that being their potential savior is much more interesting than like wondering when Kevin Love is going to come back, or if they you know, broke league rules by signing Patrick McCaw. But you can find Trevor on Twitter at Illegal Screens. You can, again, find his writing. He does a great draft guide. Watch a viewing guide every week at Fear the Sword. And you can find him at The Step Back as well, where you can check out his big boards. Trevor, as always, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Trevor. Thanks again to you, the listeners, for supporting the show and listening. Again, find Locked On Cavs on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. We're going to have a mailbag soon. So again, get those questions into lockedoncavs@gmail.com. We'll have a post up over on Reddit as well. And check out all of our coverage at For the Sword. We'll have a game preview up. Jeff Siegel ranked the Cavs trade assets. You can find that today. And you can find Zach Lockwood, one of our contributors over there, writing about why the Cavs should keep Love and Tristan around. And remember, if you have a smart speaker, just say, hey, Alexa, or hey, whatever smart speaker you have, play Locked On Cavaliers. It'll play the podcast right there for you immediately. So thanks again for listening. Thanks for your support. We're going to be back again tomorrow morning with a recap of Cavs Rockets and all throughout this upcoming road trip. So thanks for listening. I'm Chris Manning. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. We'll